It's time to turn the spotlight on local, national and international affairs with Mitchell Dye. Brought to you by Cario Waste Management, station sponsor.
The latest news from Financeland with Wiley Sims from Smartline, station sponsor.
The information provided in this segment is general advice only. Listeners should seek individual advice from their accountant, financial advisor or broker to see if the product is right for their situation. ACL number 385325.
Morning, Wiley. How are you?
Not as good as I was last week, Mitchell. What a week it's been in finance land. Good morning, listeners, and good morning, Courtney.
Morning, Wiley.
Now, on this note that you've given me, I've got this massive text, mention share market. What's going on there?
Well, you tell me, Mitch. What a week we've had. We've got the share market down nearly 10% from its high peak, down 3.7% yesterday, and trading's just commenced on the ASX today. And all forecasts are that it's going to drop again. But why is it happening? Why is it happening indeed? There's not a lot of sense for it, in my view. We find a situation where everyone's harping on about the China market, but of course the shares in China, nobody except the Chinese resident can buy shares in China. I think it's more to do with confidence, and those people that may recall old Rene Rivkin was always believing that people have this herd mentality, they follow the leader. Mm. And why it's happening on our shares is really beyond me. But of course it's affecting everybody, Mitch. I mean, well, most people at least. A lot of people say, well, I don't hold shares, it's not hurting me. But if you've got an industry managed super fund, I guarantee you won't be getting the same returns next year if this situation stays the same. So the big concern that I've got is if it filters through to the wider economy. And I've been going on for some time about reducing interest rates with the RBA, and down at 2% gives us little wriggle room. I think the next week's going to be really vitally important. If indeed share markets continue to fall and it starts to hurt companies, and we're finding companies like BlueScope, for example, mentioning yesterday that they're likely to close down their strip steel and flat products manufacturing division in Australia. There's 5,000 jobs to go in Port Kembla. We've always had already had our Alcoa closing here in Geelong. If we're shifting away from our refining industries and we become basically a miner, then that's got grave implications for the wider economy and the flow on. And again, Geelong residents can only reflect on what's happening here. It's already happened in Newcastle and Wollongong previously, and if it's likely to go around another cycle, that's the big concern. If we start finding companies folding, and indeed we found that Fortescue Metals looks like they're on a wobbly road as well, so that's a bit of a worry.
I think that consumer confidence has really been running high, or excessively high, for too long now, because you look at consumer confidence and you think maybe things aren't quite as good as what that effect is. So I think it was destined to crash at some stage, wasn't it?
Had to get a correction, and indeed we've been harping about possible correction in real estate markets, but I think the problem for the investor is where are they going to invest? I mean, if you've got cash assets at the moment, where do you put it? There's low interest on cash investments, term deposits and bonds, very little there. You'd be lucky to keep up with inflation. And we know with share markets falling, I mean, some people would argue it's the time to buy, but any prudent investor needs to find the bottom of the market to buy in. So you may buy in at the moment. We know that some of the major banks are down 5% from last Friday and likely to fall again today. But if you can pick the bottom and buy in, happy days in the future. But if you buy in and it continues to drop, you could still lose a lot of money. So I'm no share market trader, but I can be concerned about investors, where they're going to put their money. Mm. My concern is what happens if indeed people start saying real estate's where to park it, and despite all this trying to dampen real estate investment, people start pouring money back into real estate and hot up that market again.
Yeah.
So it's a real worry, and I wouldn't like to be the treasurer at the moment trying to balance things.
Now, what's happening with cash? Do you think it's going to become extinct?
Well, I hope not, Mitch, because the way things are, I'm going to put most of my cash under the mattress. But
yeah, that's right.
What's happened is the Reserve Bank's predicting a decline in the number of ATMs because customers are starting to pay more and more digitally, according to them. And we're down 20% on ATM transactions since 2009. The concern is that the banks are arguing that it costs them more to maintain their ATM network than it does from what they can wreak out of it. So although the Commonwealth Bank, for example, made $54 million last year from ATN revenues, they argue that it cost them $160 million to maintain that network. The result, of course, is that the banking system would love everybody to go digital. We know that there's new software around with smartphones, etc., where you can pay by phone, etc., where you can swipe this and swipe that. Now, that's well and good. It may make for efficiencies in the banking system, but my concern is how people are going to manage their personal finances. Because when you've got cash in your pocket, it's easy to see if you're running out. You open up the wallet and there's nothing there. When you're carrying around a piece of plastic, it's very easy to lose control of where you're at, unless you've got some real-time monitoring, or maybe people need to start dealing with their cash in different ways, or monitoring their cash in different ways if we're going to go to a completely digital platform. It was very interesting that I actually went into the Reserve Bank site, because I thought, somewhere in the back of my mind, I thought legal tender had to be cash. You couldn't refuse someone if they offered you cash or coins. But lo and behold, I found out that that's not the case at all. That legal tender in Australia has to be in terms of Australian dollars, in other words, the way we transact our economy. But it is not illegal to refuse to take cash or coins. So, in fact, a retailer would be within their rights to say, look, I don't want your cash money, I won't take your $10 bill, put it on plastic. So, again, that's going to affect some people. And my concern is not everybody is digitally literate, and not everybody's going to be capable of dealing in that environment if we end up going that way.
Although most businesses seem to love it if you pay cash, as long as it's not with 5 cent coins, because parking meters don't even take 5 cent coins in my experience. But a lot of businesses love it if you pay cash, because cash is king, and they'll put more restrictions on plastic, like they'll say minimum $10 or a 3% surcharge or whatever.
Yeah, well, you can't hide a plastic transaction. That's the difficulty. And yep, they're, I guess anyone who might be tempted to not disclose all their income, cash can be put under the mattress.
That's why businesses love it.
Yeah, that's why businesses love it.
I don't know about you, gentlemen. I wish I'd do away with the 5 cent piece now.
I wouldn't mind a couple hundred thousand of them.
I get too many of them, and I keep putting them into the little charity boxes wherever I go.
Apparently it costs 6.5 cents to make a 5 cent piece, so there you go. But anyway, we digress. What's happening with investors at the moment? There's a bit of a dilemma.
Well, as we said, where are people going to park their money now? Because if you've got cash, little return with shares or term deposits. Again, only a brave person would probably be putting their money into shares, or a very knowledgeable and experienced investor at the moment. And my suspicion is that people will start looking to maybe back to property, or indeed other forms of investment. The interesting thing is the Assistant Treasurer, Josh Frydenberg, announced on Friday, however, that there is no plan to ban self-managed super funds from being able to borrow to purchase property, which is rather interesting, because in fact the Murray's Financial System Inquiry argued that this limited recourse borrowing arrangement should be scrapped. So it seems that the Treasurer, or the Assistant Treasurer at least, is really not following Murray's advice there. And I know that a number of banks have actually got out of that market. So although it might they may continue with it, we may find it's going to be very difficult to find lenders that are still prepared to allow you to borrow funds through that source. What I might have a look at is Indented Head, Mitch, our suburb of the month. I was having a chat to Susan Doubleday down at Stockdale and Lego Port Arlington, and she tells me that there are some sales around $335,000 to $360,000 at the lower end of the market. But she said the market down there, despite the fact that it's tracking along right on the median sales price for Greater Geelong at around about this $360,000-$380,000, that there's wide variance down there, that some of the premium properties are fetching nearly up to $1 million. So it's very much in Indented Head what street you're on. If you're on the premium Esplanade streets there facing the water, you'll be paying a premium. But get a few blocks back, there is some value there. Renting those properties are around about $290 a week, and there is a good supply of vacant land down there as well. So maybe people that are looking for somewhere to purchase, first home buyers, if you don't mind a half-hour drive into Geelong, Indented Head might offer some value for our listeners.
Yeah, particularly if it booms in the future as a tourist mecca, maybe. Or maybe it's gone a bit past that now.
Oh, I could think of worse places to live, Mitch.
Yeah, exactly. Now, this week's topic is to do with the first home buyers grant.
Yeah, I thought we might just go back and have a chat about first home buyers and what's happening with the grant. There's a bit of confusion there. You can still get a $10,000 grant if you are actually building or purchasing a property and going through a construction stage. But what you can get, anybody who is a first home buyer in Victoria is eligible for a 50% reduction in stamp duty, provided the purchase between $130,000 and $600,000. To do that, you'll need to have fill out what's known as a principal place of residence and the claim form to get that deduction from your stamp duty. You can buy a house, townhouse, apartment, unit, but it must be valued at less than $750,000 if you're going into the construction stage, or, as you said, up to $600,000 if it exists previously. So that's what first-home buyers can look at, $10,000 grant only if you are buying under the new system.
So who actually qualifies for it?
Basically, all first-home buyers, you must be at least 18 years of age at settlement or at completion of construction, although there is some wriggle room there if somebody is married under the age of 18, for example, but again, they would need dispensation. At least one applicant must be an Australian citizen or permanent resident at the time of settlement or at completion of construction, and at least one applicant must intend to live in the property as their principal place of residence for 12 months within 12 months of settlement or completion of construction. So there are a few other rules there as well, but they're the main rules. If you can tick those boxes and you are a first-home buyer, you are entitled to this stamp duty reduction and or the grant, depending on if you're constructing a property. You're not eligible if you've received the first home buyer's grant before, or if indeed your partner has received a first home buyer's grant before in Australia, or if you've owned a home in Australia prior to July 2000, or if either of you has owned or part-owned a property after July 2000. So, again, if you need to check that, I would suggest that people go to the State Revenue Office Victoria, which is www.sro.vic.gov.au, and just look up first home owner, or do a Google first home owner in Victoria, and you'll be able to get details there. If indeed you're going through construction, you would need to fill out the appropriate paperwork to get access to those grants as well.
So where do people get more information?
Again, State Revenue Office Victoria, and it's sro.vic.gov.au/first home owner.
Now, what will people need if they're a first home buyer to get started if they want to borrow for that first home?
Okay, well, despite the fact we will find some people saying that they need 5%, the reality these days with these loan to value ratios plummeting in terms of eligibility, people are going to need 10% of the purchase price. They will need proof of their ongoing income, and they'll need ID. If people can tick those boxes, we could always do a pre-qualifier for them, or indeed they can go to their lender and apply for their loan. So, as we've said before, this 10% deposit is a challenge, and not everybody can save that up, especially if they're paying rent, Mitch.
So 10%, that's a pretty massive commitment. Is there an easier way to get there without needing to have that full 10% amount?
Well, there are a couple of options. One, although we don't recommend it, is you can borrow the deposit. Most lenders will not allow you to borrow the deposit, so it can be done, but we don't recommend it because you're going to end up with negative equity, and there are some lenders who will provide you with a facility to do that. Smartline doesn't actually carry any of those kind of facilities, and that's why we wouldn't recommend you do it, because you would end up, in the short term at least, with negative equity in the property, which means that if you were to sell the property, you'd actually owe more on it than what you would actually be able to recoup. The other way it can be done is if you can get a non-repayable gift. So if you've got a family, friend or somebody who's prepared to gift you the money and it's not repayable, that can be used by as a deposit, and a number of lenders will allow you to do that. And the third way, and it's something I just think we might just have a little bit of a chat about, Mitch, is family guarantee. And that's if someone in the family, and quite often it's mum and dad, or it can be another close relative, brother, sister, grandparent, offers equity in their house as security For the amount that the bank won't lend you. So let's just say you're borrowing at 90%. Mum and dad would use their equity or another close family member and equity in their property to basically cover that 10% to allow someone to then borrow without having to maybe pay a deposit.
And do you have an example there of what would happen with a family guarantee? How it all works?
Yeah, sure, Mitch. Basically, I'll just use two. One is the family pledge system that Bank of Melbourne operate on. It's a bit different to some. It's quite complex, Mitch, because each lender has their own set of rules about how family guarantee work. Where the Bank of Melbourne one's a little bit different is it's okay for mum and dad not to be earning an income because their serviceability is irrelevant. They're only concerned about the borrower, the child in this case, that actually would be borrowing and their capacity to repay the loan. The parents or close family member would then offer the equity in their home, and as I said, even if it has an existing mortgage, provided it's not over a certain level, they can use that to fill that deposit gap. So a second mortgage would get put on that home in that situation, and the borrower would borrow at about 105%, and they would have, as long as they can service that 105% borrowing, then all things being equal, then that should go through. Another one of our lenders, Blue Bay, offer a slightly different system, and this is where mum and dad might be gifting the money, and maybe mum and dad either don't want to gift the money or alternatively they might be worried about the longevity of the relationship and might be concerned that if they gift the money and if the relationship was to dissipate, they might never see it again. Blue Bay offers a slightly different process, and that is that the money is effectively gifted, but it's gifted as a loan, and Blue Bay re-lend that gift, and mum and dad actually receive an income on that. So again, each lender's got their own rules and regulations. Commonwealth Bank, Westpac, NAB, they all offer these family guarantees. They've all got their nuances, and if anyone was interested in maybe, if mum and dad are interested in helping a son or daughter to purchase a home, that is an option for them, but they would need to get advice on that. And remember that every lender's a little bit different, so if you go to Bank X, you mightn't qualify with Bank X, but there may be another product out there that may suit them, and so it's worthwhile having a chat to a broker who's got a range of these products and can advise the appropriate one for them to go forward with.
And just touching on what you mentioned before about getting negative equity in the property if you decide to just borrow the amount of the deposit, what happens if you end up defaulting if you have negative equity left over?
Well, I guess the result and upshot could be you'd be declared bankrupt.
Yep.
Because basically if you couldn't repay those funds. When we say the negative equity would occur, you would effectively be borrowing into this situation at 100% plus costs. Now, the reality is that most lenders are going to want to see some hurt money, as they call it, in other words, some deposit going in. So it would be unlikely that the loan would proceed if the borrower couldn't demonstrate that they've saved at least some money. So the reality, in most situations, they'd probably be borrowing at around, you know, the high 90%, and you'd need a very, very solid case or very, very solid income or other mitigating circumstances to be able to borrow it over 100%, purely because the lenders aren't stupid. They're not going to they realise that they couldn't recoup their risk if in fact for some reason they had to repossess the property.
So they will look at bank statements to see that the money's been saved up over an extended amount of time.
Bank statements and or rental receipts, and again it depends on each lender's individual policy, Mitch. They're not all the same here. So in other words, we might have a situation where maybe somebody has gifted a deposit, so you know someone's given them a gift enough for a deposit, but they actually haven't saved it. The bank will be aware of that because they can see the deposit going in.
Yep.
But if the borrower or the prospective borrower can say, look, I've been renting for the last 2 years, here are my rental receipts and I've been paying my rent on time,
yep,
then they will regard that as proof of being able to save, because if they weren't paying the rent, they could have been paying that on the home. And quite often we'll find that singles may be paying nearly about the same amount as what they could be repaying, maybe $1,200-$1,400 a month in rent.
Yeah.
If they were borrowing, say, around $300 for a single bedroom apartment, then their repayments would be similar to their rent that they've already been committed to.
Interesting stuff. So that's a good point there to raise, that you can actually have rental receipts being used. Now, moving on to the specials this week, what have we got?
Well, CBA's gone a bit mad this week, Mitch. They've got a couple of specials happening. They've reduced their 2 and 3 year fixed rates for owner occupiers to 4.29% for 2 year fixed, 4.39% for 3 year fixed. If you're investing, it's 4.44% for 2 year fixed and 4.54% for investment on 3 years. So notice that we're getting that differential starting to creep in between investment and owner-occupier rates. And they've also reduced the rate on the, one of their specialist products there. They've got what's called a 3 year rate saver, where they will keep the rate pegged under the standard interest rate at 4.19% for 3 years. That's a good product, for particularly for first home buyers who want the surety that they're going to be paying less than the standard interest rate for 3 years. So we do quite a few of those loans. Smartline is also our lender. Advantage has also reduced their 2 and 3 year rates by 10 basis points. So we've now got a 2 year combo rate at 4%. So we're very happy with that one. So if anyone wants some very sharp rates, they can look at our sharp line products. And again, the number of banks have changed their calculation of living expenses. So I've got this one in red, Mitch, just to remind me to mention to clients. The word of caution here, if you have been pre-qualified in the last few months and you're proceeding to auction or you're proceeding to purchase, it would be prudent just to go back to your lender or your broker and check that you can still borrow the same amount of money, because nearly every lender has increased the calculations for living expenses, which means for many people they'd be able to borrow a little less than what they could have a few months ago. So don't rely that those pre-qualifiers are still 100% accurate, because the new living expenses will be factored in once your loan goes formal.
Now, what's next week's topic?
I thought next week, Mitch, we might have a bit of a tip for owner-occupiers on how to actually reduce that mortgage and get it down. With uncertain times in the economy, it's probably a good thing to be doing. And, of course, I'll be waiting with bated breath over the next week to try and see what the economy does do, because I think the next week, if we get some recovery, I think all these cold sweats that people have got money parked away will be for no reason. If things keep sliding, we might all be in a bit of a strife.
Yep, fingers crossed that it will recover. And the number that we can ring you on?
1300 280 342. Happy to have a chat. That's 1300 280 342 if anyone wants to have a chat about borrowing for homes or any kind of finance.
Thank you very much. Wiley Sims there from Smartline.
The information provided in this segment is general advice only. Listeners should seek individual advice from their accountant, financial advisor or broker to see if the product is right for their situation. ACL number 385325.
Mitchell's Front Page with Mitchell Dye. Mondays and Tuesdays from 9 till 11 on 94.7 The Pulse.